Today we're going to be speaking about the actual salting part of Melitha, and the beginning of that discussion is that between the time of Hadach HaRishayna and the salting, and putting it into the salt, we need to first let the water drip off. Water needs to drip off of the meat in order so that when the meat has salt put onto it, the moisture that's on it doesn't absorb all of the power, all the ability of the salt, absorb all the salt, in which case it wouldn't be able to do its job. So we need to let it drip off a little bit so that it's not so soaking wet when we put salt onto it. Now, that kind of an issue, a similar kind of issue, happens at in a commercial slaughterhouse where they're doing lots and lots of melicha, and that is that as meat is being processed, again, more and more meat is being put through salt, and salt is being put onto it, as we'll see exactly how soon, as that's done, the salt can start to absorb water. There's liquid dripping off of one piece of meat and another, and eventually the salt that's sitting there or the salt that's around make it to be too wet. So it's the mashgiach's job, the mashgiach who's overseeing the melicha, to make sure that the salt doesn't get too wet. But, that term, too wet, is obviously very subjective, and it's hard to judge exactly what is or is not too wet, and it's also it's subtle because it changes slowly and slowly as it's getting wetter and wetter. So in general, that's much gear's job to keep an eye on it. But one shrita had a really interesting or creative idea of how to solve this problem and to turn it into an objective standard rather than a subjective standard, and that's because salt weighs a certain amount, but as it gets wet, it absorbs water. It gets heavier. And so what they figured out was that they could have the mashgiach every so often take a scoop of, a predetermined cup of salt, take a certain size, the same cup all the time, put onto a little scale, and if it weighs more than a certain amount, then it means it's absorbed too much water. That means it's too they figured out before that means it's too much water in the salt, in which case it's not good anymore, not usable anymore. That was a really interesting and objective way of figuring this out. But when we started probing and asking the people in charge of, well, what's the amount, they gave us a number, and they said it has to weigh more than, 0.670 pounds. But we said, how did you come up with that, and what was the decision, how did you make that determination? And no one sort of remembered anymore exactly how that had been decided originally. And then it was a little stranger is that when we looked into it, it turned out that this slaughterhouse actually used three different types of salt, and they didn't all weigh the same amount. When we took the measurements to figure out how much would be in that cup, one weighed 0.538, one weighed 598, 1.602 pounds. So the salts were starting sort of 11-12% apart from each other. Well, and how could it be that they all at 0.670 pounds would be too much? Didn't seem to be to work anymore when you have so many different types of salt. So anyhow, we decided to do our own experimentation on this, and we took salt in pre-measured amounts, in the same amount of in identical cups, and measured them out, and brought them to Rabbi Tzvi Fishman and Rav Ries, who looked at them, and put in different amounts of water into the amounts, and said, is this too wet for salting? This too wet, this too wet. And eventually, after looking at a bunch of different samples and back and forth, they decided that when the salt absorbed about 10 to 15% more weight than its original weight, and that much water was absorbed into it, that was considered too wet. Obviously it's not an exact science, so 10 to 15 was, well, they didn't say 10 to 15%, they looked at samples, which we calculated back were between 10 and 15%, which is to say is, had if you were starting with a sample that was the 0.538, then you can get it to about 0.592, 0.6061, as you can see, these numbers, different numbers, different amounts, and it actually turns out in retrospect that had that slaughterhouse, that the calculation had been done with the heavier salt, the 0.598 or 0.602, came out to 0.67, seemed right about where Ruiz and Rabbi Fishman would have put the amount, so consistent with what we were saying, but it just brought up the point, obviously, that you have to do it per plant, and per the type of salt they're using. Again, in this plant, they're using three different types, depending on for whatever reasons. So it would have to be determined. But anyhow, it's an interesting and a creative way of having the mashgiach be able to check it. And the mashgiach would keep records, so his boss could keep an eye on him to make sure he was doing what he was supposed to. Okay, now, in order to do melicha. Now, we know we've got past that, you know, we have our salt that's good and it's dry. In order to do our, to do melicha, there are basically, we'll call them four different criteria, and that is, the meat has to be covered on all sides. It has to be covered with coarse, dry salt, that what we call kosher salt, because it's used for kashering, that's why it's called kosher salt. And so it has to be coarse, which is not the fine salt that you might use in your house. It's a coarser salt. It has to be dry, we've been talking about. That's the second criteria. The meat has to stay covered for 60 minutes. And it has to be, all this has to happen during this whole 60 minutes has to be done in a way that prevents the blood from being reabsorbed into the meat. Okay, as we'll talk, and usually it's on a slanted tray or on a tray with holes, and then we'll talk in a minute about how that's done. There's a bunch of different ways that this is done commercially, how these four criteria are met. Okay, so our first two criteria is that it has to be covered on all sides with dry salt. So the simplest thing is, put your meat down onto your surface and pour salt onto it. Okay, and then flip it over and do it on the other side. Okay, and make sure you're going to get everything, you're going to get salt wherever you need it to be. That works. It's not terribly efficient. You know, it might work in your house or in a little butcher shop, but it's not going to work on a big commercial operation. It's too labor intensive to do it. So what some people do is they have a big, basically a big container, like a big table filled with salt on it, and they dump the meat onto the salt, then flip it over onto the other side, and basically the meat coming in contact with the salt into this bed of salt will cover just about every place, and then someone's there to touch it up to catch the parts that weren't caught, you know, that didn't get any salt onto them, and it doesn't work very well. That doesn't work well when something with a cavity like a chicken, a whole chicken, that has an inside cavity, no salt's going to get into there, so the Mashgiach would have to manually put it into there. Or an alternative is that there's a spout pouring down with salt, pouring salt down at the table or onto that work area, and when you stick the chicken under it, then get salt right through the center of it. Another way of doing it, or just passes, all the meat that passes by gets sprayed by this, spray of salt coming down. And one of the weakness is that this is using all these commercial ways of using it are having salt being used again and again. I mean, the salt that's one piece of meat is hitting in, then another piece, and another piece, till it finally sticks onto one and gets carried away, but otherwise there's lots of liquid dripping around, and of course, as we mentioned, there's a concern that will cause it to get too wet, and then the salt won't be suitable. You'll have to add more salt to the pile, because this salt will not be useful anymore as is. Now, for small pieces, on a commercial level, for very small pieces like tongue or cheek or tail, skirts, other things like that, small pieces, what some people use is a tumbler. They throw all the pieces of meat in a tumbler. It's like this long drum laying on its side, and it rotates. And basically what you do is you throw the meat into it, all pieces of meat into it, put a lot of salt into there, and then you tumble it around. And basically, it ends up by turning and turning and moving everything around, gets everything coated with salt, which is an efficient way to get salt onto all the different parts. That's what some people do for small pieces. Okay, so now we figured out how to get everything covered with the dry salt. Now for our third and fourth criteria, which is we have to keep it covered for 60 minutes without any chance of reabsorption. So the traditional way to do that is you take a board, the board will have holes in it, and you put it on that board, and the board, even better, should be on a slant, or just a slant without the holes in it, but better have both of it. You put it onto there, all the blood that drips out of the meat will go through the holes onto the floor, or down the slanted surface, and drain off to the floor again. And the point being, this way the blood will not get absorbed into another one piece of meat that's there. And again, you could do it in a butcher shop, or a person can do it in their house if they will kosher meat. But in a larger, packing house, it doesn't work so well. It's not so terribly efficient. So there's three basic ways that this is done. The one way is that it's on a belt, which is to say, is once we've gotten our salt on, as we discussed beforehand, the meat is put onto a belt. The belt has holes in it, and the belt moves from point A to point B. And it's timed so that it takes 60 minutes to get from A from the beginning of the belt to the end of the belt. And this way, the meat just sits on there and just very slowly moving from here to there. And anything that drips off drips through the holes in the belt and out the bottom. Excuse me, so it doesn't get absorbed into another piece of meat. You don't need, since it has the holes in it, does not need to be angled, this belt. But for whatever reason, just a logistic reason, when this is done for chickens, poultry, there, the belt is angled for whatever reason. And on this belt that's for chickens, there'll be hundreds or thousands of chickens on the belt. It takes 60 minutes to get from beginning to the end. And they just keep on piling on more and more of them until at the end they're dropping off. Of course, when you do a system like this, we have a timed belt like this that's supposed to go from here to there in 60 minutes. The mashgiach's responsibility to every once in a while actually time it. You know, tie something onto one end and see if it actually takes 60 minutes to get to the other end to make sure that they are that the belt hasn't speeded up in a way that makes it not effective. Now, there was a plant where they had this kind of a belt system, and salt would fall off the belt just from all the stuff piled onto it, and he wanted to capture it and save some money by reusing that salt. He was not allowed to do that. The reason is because the din is that once we do melicha for 60 minutes, the Masid Lachatkhila we should do for 60 minutes, but Meikar HaDin, the Chaver brings that 18 minutes is enough to do melicha. And therefore, if the salt was on for 18 minutes, meaning, you know, like a third of the way through the belt, salt that had been on there for 18 minutes is already considered to have done a full melicha, and it cannot be used for another melicha afterwards. So he was not allowed to use that salt, reuse that salt, capture salt that was falling off the table, off the belt. Okay, so a second way of doing this is that what I just described is for a very large operation, like I said, with chickens, hundreds or thousands of chickens, or a very large meat operation. But in a mid-size operation, they may not have such, you know, a device like that could hold the meat for 60 minutes. And they would do it in a container. Okay, and they call the containers, often they call them a combo. And so some of them are, like you see on the right, the whole container is full of holes in it. So as the meat is being covered with salt, you put it into this container, it sits in the container for an hour, and you're done. Other ones don't have holes in the container itself, but what they'll do is on the bottom, they lift up the bottom, there's like the floor, there's something above the floor that suspends a new floor above the original floor, and either that new floor has holes in it, you see one of the pictures, or the new floor is just a slanted board, again, where things can drain off and fall under the new floor to the original floor, which is lower down. So again, the meat doesn't sit in the blood that drips out. When you do melicha for these, in these kind of containers, there isn't any automatic timing like in the belt. So what will happen is, once the meat is all in, the mashgiach will write down a time, and I'll say, okay, at 10:46, this batch will be ready. It'll have sat for its hour, and then they can take it out. Okay. Other people, what they'll do is a little more advanced than that, is they put these containers they themselves go onto a belt. So they fill up the container, attach it to a chain or a belt, and that itself takes an hour to get around to the place where it's emptied out. Same kind of a thing. Okay, now, when you're using containers, once a container is finished, once they've done the full melicha and everything's been taken out of it, now the mashgiach needs to make sure that it's clean. And that's because you don't want to have meat in there, any leftover scraps of meat in there, because those scraps are meat that already had melicha, and you can't do melicha on the new meat that will go into there will be dripping blood onto the, will be having melicha together with meat that already had finished its melicha, that would make those scraps trafe. So therefore you're not allowed to do it. You have to make sure there are no scraps of meat into it also. And the other side is that sometimes in cleaning between one batch and another, they hose it down. That's just part of cleaning up. They spray water into it, so you have to make sure there's no water into there, because again, that would make our salt too wet and not be suitable for melicha again also. Okay. A third way, so I mentioned so far, you could do the melicha sitting for the 60 minutes on a belt or in some kind of a container. And a third way is one factory that I saw, one slaughterhouse that I saw, where they have the meat suspended on an overhead chain. Okay, the meat is hanging. And basically the meat is attached, is hanging from this chain for the entire, for the whole process, which to say is, it goes through the Hadar HaRishon water, then it comes out of the Hadar HaRishon water, goes past the station where people put salt onto it, and then it leaves those people, and it continues on the same belt, and it just hangs in the air, and travels on a slow path that takes it 60 minutes of that. So it goes from point to from place to place to place, and everything, is, the belt is timed to last, you know, half an hour at the Hadar HaRishon, passed by the salting station, where people get the salt onto it, and then 60 minutes of hanging in the air. And there, of course, there's no problem of something, anything dripping or collecting, because it's just hanging in midair. So that works very, that works well. Just interesting way of doing it. Okay, now, in the first two ways that I mentioned, which is the belt or the containers, there's a seemingly there's a problem, which is that the meat is all piled on top of each other. So here I'm talking about, we don't want to get the salting and the blood from one onto the other, well, they're all piled on top of each other, then why isn't that its own problem? So the truth is that the Gemara says there's not a problem. The Gemara specifically says there's no problem to do melicha from one piece onto another piece. You know, one piece, having, if they're both getting melicha together, that's okay. The Gemara doesn't explain why, and they're trying to have all kinds of explanations having to do with all kinds of rules, general rules about melicha, Dama Mishul Kshorik and Kabbalah Kach Poltoi, and I did Targum Mishul by Bala. We're not going to go into the different answers that there are, but we're going to talk about one nafkin that comes out according to one of the answers, where the Rama says that L'chatchila, you should make sure that if you're kashering a piece of meat that has a cavity inside of it, his example is a Daifin Shlema, a whole side of ribs. So the ribs are at an angle. So if you lay the ribs in one way, then there's like a place where liquid can collect. So he says, during melicha, make sure that the opening, the cavity, faces down. So the ribs would have to be facing onto in a downward direction, so that water can't puddle up inside of the ribs. That's his example is a Dorfen Shlema, you know, a side of beef, the ribs. Another example is that of like it's a chicken, the inside of a chicken. Again, there's a cavity in there. So if the chicken lays on its side, then blood can collect and like puddle inside of the cavity, and that would be a problem of blood sitting together, at least on the chatchil level. You're not supposed to do that. Now, when you do it at home, a person attaches a chicken at home or in a small butcher shop, it's easy to take care of that. Because, you know, a person is dealing with it just a few pieces, and of course the person who's doing it is a Shem Shabbos, he's pay watching out for it. But when you go to slaughterhouses, by and large, no one's paying attention. By and large, the meat is just being dumped into the combo, thrown onto the belt, or this and that, and there's often no one paying any attention to which way this is being done. Not really so sure why. Maybe because in commercial melicha, you never see any blood coming out. In practice, there isn't. You see, I mean, the tiniest amount of liquid coming out of these. Maybe they don't really take sort of, what's the problem of it puddling when there isn't any liquid in the first place? Maybe, well, of course, you know, that's not what the Rama says, and we're assuming or pretending or hoping that there's blood going to come out. So this is a little, you know, needs some more thought about why this is, but in lots of places, again, no one's paying any attention, and they're just dumping the meat in any which way that it happens to fall, or the chicken's piling up hunches of them without paying much attention to whether the cavity is, the opening is facing down or not. Okay, now, another example of where this could be a problem of the liquid collecting is in livers. So one is something we're not going to talk about today, which is when you liver, before it's kashered, if it's inside of a bag and liquid collects into there, there's a problem of that liquid being sitting together with the livers themselves for 24 hours. Mr. Shem, we'll talk about livers, we're going to talk about that. The second is that the minig is that we put salt onto liver before we broil it. It's not required really by then. It's a minute to do that. And so there also, if you leave the salt on the liver for too long, as I said, 18 minutes is already a time that's considered a time for melicha. If you leave it on for too long, then blood will start coming out, and now the liver is sitting there in that blood. So the Rama says, because of that, the minig is, l'mochan p'tas kasher nitcha b'shvud, you should put the salt on just right when it's on the spit already. It's about to be put onto the fire, which is, and you quickly broil it before blood comes out. And that's an example of this kind of thing also. Now, there's another angle to this question, a little bit different angle. And that's like this. The thing is that you're supposed to have salt on all sides of the meat, which is to say is a big piece of meat, you don't have to get salt on the inside of the meat, but on all the sides, on the outer surfaces of the meat, there has to be salt on it. And the Ramah paskens that if you didn't do it, if you had salt only on one side, then the end of the meat is treif. You're not allowed to use that meat. You're not allowed to eat that meat based on the salting if it has salt just on one side. Okay? So that means to say is, if let's say, for example, two pieces of meat are touching each other, and there's two pieces attached next to each other, and you pour salt over all of them, so the spot where they touch each other has no salt on it. Basically, if you have these two pieces are touching, there's salt on all the outer surfaces, but the place where they touch, no salt gets into that spot. So that would be an example where, according to the Ramah, the meat would be no good, even to the other, because there were places where the salt didn't get. There was only salt on the outer surfaces, but not on this sort of this surface, which is also an outer surface, but it's being covered by another piece of meat. Now, because of that chashash, Prima Gadam says that he had his own minig, that before he would kasher chicken or just other birds, he would cut it open. He'd break it open. Instead of kashering the chicken whole, he would split the chicken beforehand. And the reason is because if you don't split it, how are you going to make sure there's salt on the inside? It's easy to get salt on the outside, but how are you going to get salt onto the inside surfaces of the chicken, the cavity inside? How are you going to get salt onto the inside? So therefore, you have to open it up to make sure you get salt on the inside. And second is that there are internal organs inside the chicken, and if you don't open it up, you won't be able to get those out well. And therefore, that will be another example of a place where salt didn't touch. If let's say, for example, if the heart would be laying inside the chicken, then the salt would be on the outside of the heart, but the place where the heart touches the meat would not be getting any salt onto it, and if that piece of meat is not getting salted properly. Now, there are shlitas who follow that, who do that, and who actually will split up, they won't kasher chickens unless they're split open, but most don't. Most of them are not makbid on that, and they will kasher chickens even if they're not split open. But they deal with this issue that the Prima Gadam brings by doing two things. First is they make sure they put plenty of salt on the inside cavity, like I described before. And some use they have a shoot that comes down that just pours through. It's just pouring out of it. Salt's coming out. They can stick the whole cavity underneath it to make sure they get plenty of salt on the inside. Or other ways, just stick their hand in to make sure they get salt on covering well on the inside. And the second is that they use a vacuum to get out the internal organs. Now, they don't use it for all the organs. What happens is, after the shechita, at a certain point in the processing, the USDA needs to check the chicken to make sure that it's suitable, it's safe to be consumed. So what they do is, most of the internal organs, that's the kishkas, the intestines, the heart, lung, liver, crop, that's the zephyr, and the gizzard, the kurkuvin, come out all together in one big clump. Those all get pulled out of the carcass, the body of the chicken, in order for the USDA to check them. So the USDA checks them, and actually we check them for trachis also. That's a separate thing we've talked about. Okay, so that whole group of items is pulled out. Some of them we use for eating kurkuvin and is actually saved as for eating, and the liver comes out. They're also saved for eating, but all those pieces tend to come out together. Well, that's left behind. Is potentially kidneys and sometimes the lungs also. So what happens is before the chicken goes for malicha, there's someone who vacuums, literally took a special kind of vacuum cleaner inside the chicken to make sure they get out everything that was left inside. Again, most of the stuff gets out by itself, gets ripped out by itself, because the USDA needs to look it over. FSIS needs to look it over. They need to inspect it for their own reasons. And then the bank can need to check it to make sure it's not a trade for those are some of those things. But they would. But the rest gets vacuumed out. So that's how they try to deal with the Prima Gadam's concern. Some actually have a mashgiach do that, or just have one of the plaintiff employees do that. But if a person buys a piece of chicken and sees either the lung or kidneys, that's what would be potentially left behind. the lung would be in a little cavity, as you see here in the picture, the top, what we call the top of the chicken, and the kidneys would potentially be in the same kind of a cavity. It's in the bottom, in the thigh. The kidneys would be brownish red, and the lungs would be pinkish red. So if they're there, if they got left behind, which happens, the vacuum didn't get them out, and they missed one, then in that case, we have an example where the melicha was not done properly to that piece of meat, so the liver or the lung would be discarded. They have their own ways that they have to be kosher. They were surely not kosher. And then the place where they were touching on a piece of chicken, that part should also be cut off and discarded because it was not kosher properly. The rest of the chicken is okay, but that spot, which is covered by the lungs or the kidneys, again, they're like sort of in these little cavities where they might get stuck and the vacuum didn't catch them. Those need to be discarded because that's a spot where there was salt on the other side, the other part of the chicken, all around the rest of the chicken there was salt, but on that spot of the chicken didn't have salt on the side, and therefore it needs to be discarded. The last thing, excuse me, I'm going to mention is, we're talking all about melicha, that had a kasher meat with salt. The salt gets all the blood out. But there are some people who are on a extremely low sodium diet, and essentially they can't eat salt meat that had melicha. Meat that has melicha absorbs a certain amount of that salt, and that is not suitable for these people from a medical perspective. So some of them actually just can't eat meat. That's what they do. But I'm just going to mention four different ideas that are suggested of how they potentially could eat meat anyhow, in spite of, even though they're not supposed to have sodium or too much sodium, salt. I'm just going to mention them briefly. And obviously, no one should try any of these without speaking to their doctor for the health of it, and to a Rav who could decide if it's appropriate and also how to do it, because I'm just going to talk about it, just mention it briefly. Okay, the first is that salting is not the only way to kosher meat. You can kosher meat by broiling it also. So if a person, I should have said this, any of these methods I'm going to mention assumes that the person can get meat that is going to get meat that was not kosher yet and that had any nikur done to it. You don't need nikur for chickens, but for meat you do need to have nikur to remove fats and blood vessels, as we've spoken about in the past. So you'd have to have meat that's never kosher, which is not so easy to come by, of course, because most people wouldn't sell you meat that's not kosher. It's not kosher. But if you're able to get that, all these presuppose you can get meat that was not kosher and that had nikud done if it needed to be. Okay, so the first is that if you don't salt meat, you can get the blood out through broiling it, through tzlia. It's something that we do always from liver, and that's what we'll talk about, some of the details of how that's done. But that's a potential way of having a piece of meat. Take the piece of meat, instead of salting it, you can broil it as a way of getting the blood out. Again, there's lots of details how that's done, but that's perfectly suitable if you know how to do that. Okay. The second is one that the Gemara says. The Gemara says something called chalita, which is to put the meat into boiling water. I mean, the water is boiling before you put the meat into it. It's called chalita, and the Gemara said that it works. It makes it that no more blood will come out later. Whatever can come out, comes out, nothing else will come out later on, and then the blood is mutter. As long as the blood never is peerish, as we've spoken about, it's okay. But the Machaber, the Shulchan Aruch brings, that the Ga'onim said that we're not considered to be Bekiyim anymore on how to do Chalita, and therefore you're not allowed to do it. So that sounds like it sinks that ship, and you shouldn't be able to use Chalita. However, there are Poskim who, on certain rare occasions, have said that you're allowed to do that. I'll mention that one of them in Shevet Levi, when he talks about it, a specific person who he told him he's allowed to do it, he said to the person, "Bebechiras ma b'miyutai," choosing the least worst option, "Yase chalita hanal," you should do chalita the way I described to you. He has his own specific way he wants him to do chalita. "The enu chashasavcha gadol mizeh," and your situation is the most shasavcha, so I have to allow you to be mekel. "Av chalila lismech azeh b'makom acher," but no one else should be samech on this. It's a very, very case-specific heter that he gave for the person to do. But it is a potential option, again, under a rabbinic direction of if you're allowed to do it and how you would do it. Now, third is, over the generations, people have suggested other things. They said, let's do melicha with other things. One of the most famous is, people said, let's do melicha with sugar. Then there was people said, how about ammonium chloride or calcium chloride? Those are other materials. Chemically, they're referred to as salt. Salt is a reaction between an acid and a base. They have a certain properties like table salt, which is sodium chloride, but they don't have sodium, and they probably don't have exactly the same properties as salt either. And then other chemicals were suggested as ways to get the blood out. And by and large, Poskim rejected these ideas. They said, listen, Chazal taught us we can get the blood out through broiling or through salting, and we can't try other kinds of things. Again, there were maculum in specific situations or certain places people say like that, but by and large, these ideas to do melicha with some other substance rather than plain old sodium chloride table salt, by and large, they were rejected. Okay, and the last is, a person can work within the rules of melicha to get meat that's suited for this person, even though the, and somehow the meat will be kosher anyhow. But one idea was, for some people, maybe if it only sits in the soil for the bare minimum, the 18 minutes that it needs to, maybe that's good enough. Maybe that'll make it not so, it won't absorb so much salt, and it would be suited medically for this kind of a person. So b'dieved, or shasat chak, a person can, in fact, do melicha for less than 60 minutes. Whether that's going to work medically, obviously needs a doctor's input of here, because the same amount of salt is going to be done. It's the same kind of salting process, just for a little for a short amount of time. So you'd have to know if that's okay. And a variation of that was, or a combination of that was, it was suggested, how about if a person takes a whole huge piece of meat, like a whole forearm, okay, and do the melicha on that together. You're allowed to. Meat can be as big as you want it to be when you do the melicha to it. Just put salt on the outsides. And then after the melicha is done, or maybe the melicha is done for just 18 minutes, after the melicha is done, then trim off an outer layer of the salt, of the meat. And could it be that the salt only penetrates from the medical side, only penetrates, you know, let's say an inch deep, and the meat that's deeper in doesn't get so much sodium into it, it might be okay health-wise. So of course that needs a doctor to approve it, it needs a butcher to tell you how to do it and if that can be done. But if possible, then the melicha would be working within the rules. The melicha was done perfectly fine, the melicha is perfectly fine, and just then he's trimming out outer parts so he can get to the part that's better for him medically.